everyone, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. On this show, we will focus on strengthening women's mental fitness through sharing the joy, struggle, and wisdom of each woman's journey. Our show is powered by Pivotal Moments. Go to pivotalmoments.org to learn more. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. This podcast is powered by Pivotal Moments Media. I'm your host, Sandy Lutton, and I'm super excited today to be joined by Beth Shahay. Beth is a certified life coach and wayfinder. So Beth, what is a wayfinder? I know what a certified life coach is. Obviously, I work with you. You are my life coach, and I'm so thankful for that. And I kind of could make my own assessment of what a wayfinder is, but I'm way more curious about what you call a wayfinder.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those terms that we can all kind of imagine. What would it be if you found your way? And what is your way, right? And so it's my job to come alongside people, to hear their stories, to understand where they are, and to encourage them that exactly where they are is a great place to start. And from there, we continue to find their way. And so it is a journey, right? It is, it is a place in time where we decide we really want to know where we're going. And as I've been taught and trained as a wayfinder, a lot of what I do is exactly that. Just come alongside. Maybe I have a map that I pull out of my pocket. Maybe I have a flashlight of compassion. Maybe I have just the right questions. But it's kind of one of those things where I believe that everyone knows their own way, actually. I'm just the guide along the way that says, huh, let's figure yours out together. And yeah. So that's what it is. That's what I kind of look at it as.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, who doesn't need a wayfinder? That we all have moments in our lives that require us, you know, someone to kind of guide us through certain times. And, you know, obviously on this show, we talk about different people's journeys. And the goal here is really to inspire people as they go through their own journey and help them stay mentally fit and continue to thrive as they, you know, as life's obstacles hit us, right? And you have your own personal journey and transition, and your company is the Grounded Canary. And the website for that is groundedcanary.com. So tell us about why you decided to pivot. Where did you come from, first of all? Why you decided to pivot and create the Grounded Canary and become a certified life coach?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was probably, I don't know, January of 2020. Feels like a long time ago, but it wasn't. that I was asked to be a part of something really cool in my hometown in State College, Pennsylvania, called State of the Story. And each month they do a different theme. And the theme that particular February was going to be a relaunch. When have you relaunched? When has something happened to you that was either a crisis or a trauma or something, a loss that you had to relaunch from? And I sat with the woman that asked me, you know, to be a part. I said, you know what? I've been really, really fortunate. I haven't had a lot of loss in my life. As a matter of fact, I feel like I've only gained, and I've just constantly been able to pivot and learn and pivot and learn and grow. And she said, well, what about that? Tell me about some of that. And I went on to tell her about a story and let me back up a second. Essentially what she was saying, so maybe you don't feel like you've lost anything to relaunch, but maybe you found a way to constantly be in a state of relaunching. I said, isn't that interesting? Okay. And she said, can you tell me about a time that you relaunched? And I said, yes, I can. And what I started to realize as I told this story was I was losing old ways and finding new ways. And that's how I relaunched. And so I told her this story about a long time ago, I was asked to be a part of a missions trip to Apulina, Romania, which in that particular community, it's a community of gypsies that literally has about nothing. They are the lowest of the lows, and they are a forgotten culture. And we were able to go on these particular house visits that you know, we were there to impact the community and talk about relationships and connections and values and how we can respect one another as a group. That was what we were taxed to do. But we went on specific house visits to some of the gypsies that particularly wanted a visit from us, that wanted to share their story. And so we went into this home, and I remember sitting on a cold dirt floor in a four-walled room in Apollina, and I was sitting next to this 5-foot woman. She was probably somewhere between 60 and 80 years old. You wouldn't even know how old she is because her life had treated her in such a way that you wouldn't know. And she was hunched over, and she, you know, she had a babushka on, she had white hair coming out, and we're all standing there above her. And I thought, as she's telling the story, which is being translated through the pastor where we were, I realized I'm not connected. I can't see her eyes. So I got on the dirt floor and I looked up underneath her. Now, these homes are not homes. They're practically huts. Anything that they could do to create a space to cover themselves is what they used, right? So there was one thin wire that held a light bulb that gave us our light. There was a barrel in the corner for heat and cooking. No furniture, except maybe a small table or something she constructed. But it was just it was a dirt floor. So I got underneath her, looked up in her eyes, and just held her hands. So I'm staring up at her and I'm hearing her story. And, you know, there were dogs barking, there were kids squealing. You know, there were people peeking in the windows at, who are these crazy Americans that are here in our culture, in our community? And, you know, it was just this fascinating moment of stillness amidst chaos all around us. And she started to talk about the people that depend on her and the family, you know, that they might put another piece of plywood or roofing or something that created their particular living space. And it was almost like a house of cards just built one upon the other on this one woman's space. And she was, you know, even though she was so still, what was happening all around her was adultery, infections, miscarriage, abuse, hopelessness, shame, physical pain, teen birth, sadness, death. I mean, all this is happening in this community that's just such a lost place. And as we were listening to her story, she was talking about how very deliberately, very thoughtful, she was alone, yet she was light. And she was a person in this community that that shined her light. And she felt hope from that. And she felt excitement. And she felt she had a purpose. And that all of these people, all the chaos, all the people that are around her depending on her, actually are what made her light shine even more. Mm. And so as she was talking about that, and I'm looking into her eyes in that moment, I didn't know what to say. We were offered the option to comment or to ask through the translator. And I had nothing to say. And I'm not a singer, but I'll tell you what I decided to do was sing. So I literally went off singing, "This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine." And it was all I had. And at that moment, it was all that was needed. Mm. And I was only there to share love, embrace that space with her, and exist in that moment. And I knew that God would take care of the rest. And so I knew it. And I knew her. And in that moment, we were like two canaries in a coal mine. You know, canaries used to be used to you know, send into miners would send them into a coal to see if there were toxins before they went in. And if the canary stopped singing, they knew that it was not safe for them to enter. And so in that moment, I felt like the two of us were canaries in a coal mine. Here we are in her cave, alerting the troops, calling in backup, trying to assist as best we could for God and for this community. And that was the moment that I felt like we were one. And I was forever changed by that moment. And that was 10 years ago. I simply went I was called to bring ministry to this community. And I had no idea that this little side job, this little house visit, this little heart visit, was going to impact me and draw me back to Apollina two more times in the past 3 years and be among those gypsies. And that's really where it launched. And so as I told my story, mm-hmm. I already had a different job in higher education, and I quit the job and I decided I needed to embark on hearing other people's stories. I think that the power of story is inevitable. How she told her story, how I told my story, and how it transforms lives. And so I forever want to give my life to hearing other people's stories. And so that is how I kind of launched into life coaching and found a program that spoke to my heart after years and years of research, because I kind of had an inkling I might want to do this one day, and finally committed, put fear aside, and went for it. And ever since then, I've been hearing stories and hearing hearts and helping people find their way.
That's amazing. I love that. And I love that you said you had to put the fear aside, because I've also made my own transition and decided to go a different direction. And, you know, it is so scary. So what advice would you give people who maybe haven't had quite the profound experience that you did, but maybe they know they're not in, they haven't found their life's purpose yet? What would you say to someone? How do you get over that fear?
Well, it's interesting because you ask kind of two questions. What if they haven't found their life's purpose yet? Mm-hmm. Is one question. And then what if they have, but they're afraid to make that transition?
Right.
Right. So if someone, I can answer them both. If someone hasn't found their purpose yet, I believe they just haven't paused to listen.
Interesting.
And I think that there's so much power in the pause. And a lot of that comes, and you and I've talked about this, Sandy, but mm-hmm. a lot of it comes in just simple noticing in moments when you are feeling like you are experiencing freedom and you are experiencing all systems are a go. What does it feel like when you are in your zone and you're in your jam and you're doing the things that you love to do? And on the contrary, what does it feel like when you're pushing hard, you're trying to make it through? You should be doing it this way. You ought to be doing this. You have to do this. The things that make you feel like you're not free. You're shackled. You feel right. A sense of obligation. You feel a sense of responsibility. You feel a sense of I'm trying to follow roles and rules. Right. So noticing the difference. What feels shackles on for you? What feels shackles off for you?
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to recognize those things, you can start to understand, huh? When I'm feeling shackles off, I'm feeling freedom. I'm also feeling in my integrity. I'm following my truth. But right. When I'm feeling shackles on, I'm following somebody else's truth for me.
Right.
Or I'm making choices that don't align with who I am anymore. Maybe they did at one point, but maybe they don't anymore. And fear screams, intuition whispers. So you got to listen closely. Because when we hear our intuition saying, this isn't the right path, or this is something interesting, it's listening. And I do think that basic pausing and noticing is the first step towards finding your way and finding your purpose.
I was going to say that you've taught me so much about that, like really taking that moment to pause and think. And you talked about the shackles and, you know, oftentimes, and I know just my own experience, when I think about the shackles, I used to think of it as they weren't self, like I didn't put those shackles on me, right? I used to think of it that way. But the reality is, and you helped me to see, I'm the one who created those shackles and put those on. So then it's, all right, so once you come to that awareness, how do you change that?
So a lot of it has to do with our thoughts around it. So, oftentimes we can get into a space where, you know, my father has an engineering firm. I want to follow in his footsteps. It seems like a really good career path. I'm going to go get an engineering degree. I'm going to get out. I'm going to work for him and I'm going to carry on the tradition. So for, you know, 20, 25 years, you might have an engineer that's done that plan, but never really thought, is that what I want to do? What if that engineer, instead of just working in his father's firm, maybe he likes engineering, but maybe he wants to do bridges over in Africa, or, you know, do something different that allows him to bring his skills, talents, desires, and his essential self forward in that career. But we can easily just get caught in this is what I need. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is my space. And so when we start to think that, when we start to think the thoughts or have, you know, these these beliefs about how it should look, then we start to really navigate our life in that way. And so, you know, it could be about anything. Limiting beliefs could be about anything. And they're beliefs that keep you shackled. They're beliefs that keep you in this space. So we look at those, and that's a lot of what I do with people, whether it's we're using a tool that I love to use, Byron Katie, called The Work. Mm-hmm. You simply just start challenging it. You know, a thought could be, I will never succeed. Well, let me think of something. What's a thought that we could do? I'm a failure. That's a universal belief that people have, because they always think of how they could do it differently, how they could make it better, how they could be more successful. So I'm a failure. And then you ask yourself, is it true? Well, yeah, I definitely feel that, because I can list 1,000 things that my mind will tell me. And then can you absolutely know it's true? Well, no, I'm sure I've done some good things in my life. Well, how do you feel, you know, when you think the thought, I'm a failure? And then, you know, we talk about that, and, you know, oftentimes it'll come up and you say, I feel downtrodden. I feel other people are better than me. I feel like, I feel a pit in my stomach. I feel heaviness in my chest, you know? And then, okay, so tomorrow you wake up and you're about to live your life. A new day has come, the alarm goes off, and you've never been able to think about what failure is. Mm. How do you feel? And in that way, it's light, it's free. I feel creative. I feel like I look around like, oh, what am I going to do today? You know? Right. And then we start to turn it around and we play with that thought.
Yeah.
And when we turn it around, we can prove otherwise.
Right.
And then we can see how something might be truer than that. And then what happens is that dislodges the thought in our mind. And it's like loosening a tooth where we just simply can say, ah, interesting. That could be true. And so we start to challenge our thoughts.
Yeah. So you talked about challenging the thoughts. So one thing that you taught me, and you said this was such an eye opener for me. And every time I talk to you, I have this amazing eye opening moment. But I think some of the things I say to you are, oh, I wish I could do more of this, or I should have done that, or I could have done this and I should have done this differently. And I wish I'd have said that, but I said this. And you said to me, what if you approach that, right? Approach talking to myself, right? Like, let's say that's that internal narrative. You said to me, what if you approach yourself with love and compassion and curiosity as opposed to judgment? And I was like, wow, oh my gosh, she's so right. Like, I am absolutely so judgmental towards myself. And I think a lot of us do that. So talk a little bit more about that, like that thought, like the curiosity versus the judgment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we do this kind of work where we're really looking at our life's purpose, or we're looking at who we are, how we want to show up in the world, you know, we can look in the mirror and think, gosh, this is not the life I thought I was going to have. You know, it really starts to bring up thoughts and feelings. And when the deeper that you dig, the more it cultivates and the more it brings up. And so, you know, to look at that and feel, you know, judgmental towards yourself, it's just simply what you're doing is just putting more shame upon shame upon shame. And when we can look at ourselves without judgment, without any sort of negative connotation, and we can say, huh, you know, instead of, you know, judging ourselves and saying, oh my gosh, what is wrong with me? I should know better. I you know, I've dealt with this all my life, and I need, you know, I'm just a story fondler, or, you know, whatever. To change it to say, ah, interesting. I wonder why I responded like that. I wonder why I've responded like that for the last 20 years. What is it that I'm looking for in this relationship? What is it that I'm doing? You start to look, and it's almost like the flashlight you're holding in the dark is one of compassion and curiosity. And when we have that sense of, huh, isn't that interesting? All of a sudden it becomes like a game, and we start to gently reveal pieces of us that are parts of the puzzle. So when you have this flashlight of compassion and curiosity together, it simply says, I want to find out. I want to know more. I want to understand why I cope this way, why I protect certain parts of myself, why I'm afraid to be vulnerable. I want to know. And when we know, that knowledge is power. That knowledge is truth. That knowledge helps us to see, and we can give ourselves grace. We can give ourselves permission. We can recognize that who we were then is not who we are now. And if we use our now to inform our then, it's freedom.
Right.
But if we stay caught in those places and don't get curious or show compassion towards them, we just beat ourselves up more, and we just allow ourselves to stay stuck in that versus opening it up, shining light, seeing truth, and allowing that clarity and freedom to come forward. And that's what we look at. That's what living in your integrity is. That's what giving yourself that compassion is all about. And so anybody that I work with, any clients that I work with, I talk about that from day one, because it is about getting curious and really sinking in and wanting to know.
So you talk about getting curious. And this is one thing I think I struggled with a bit is, how do you do that? So you're in that moment, you're beating yourself up. Oh, I should have done this. I could have done this better. I should have prepared more. How do you get curious in that moment? Are there steps to it? Is there a process? What is the key to pulling yourself out of that and really getting into that curious moment and asking yourself, all right, what's going on right now?
So, there's several different pieces of awareness when it comes to being in a situation. Like, I'm in a situation and, you know, I call it like the hurricane moment. Something's happening and I'm getting triggered and I'm not sure what's happening. And so the first, typically people notice after. So, and there's a progression of awareness, but in noticing after, we see the struggle that happens after it occurred, but we see it with awareness and we can look at that situation and say, wow, why was I triggered? What happened there? What was going on for me? And so that's still a beautiful moment of awareness because at least you're noticing it. The second piece would be what we want to progress towards is, you know, okay, how about during? When you're in the moment, and I can remember one even last week, I was in my kitchen and I remember during, I was like, why am I spiraling? What is happening here? You know, what's going on? And I remember thinking, well, I'm smack dab in the middle of this situation. I'm aware. So that's good. I'm still not sure how I'm going to respond, but I know that it's happening and I'm able to kind of bring presence to that moment. So that's another step. The furthest step, which is where we want to go, is how do we notice before? So in noticing before something's triggering, we're able to notice what might cause a conflict or trigger us ahead of time and create some sort of a plan. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah.
So there's this progression. Wherever you happen to notice it is beautiful because at least you're noticing. And that's the main component that's helpful. Notice when it's happening. So if you're feeling judgmental towards yourself, if you're feeling triggered by something, if you're dealing with a relationship or a decision about a job, what is it about it that feels that way? And notice when you have a pit in your stomach, what is going on there? And start talking to that space. When you can create space between what's happening and your mind, literally creating a little bit of space in there, you can say, okay, I see this is happening. I'm here. I know that I need to be thoughtful about this and I need to ask some questions about this, but I'm not going to let it blend with me to the point where I can't see clearly. And so oftentimes it's about taking that moment and putting it out in front of you and looking at it, being a compassionate witness to what's happening. So imagine if you're like, for me, I'm in the kitchen and things are whirring around above me. Imagine taking an eagle eye view and looking at that. That's the kind of space we're trying to create when those things happen. We're creating a space that allows us to look at it rather than be in it.
Right.
When we create that space, it lessens the emotion. It lessens the the symptoms that we're having, and it allows us to actually factually and truthfully look at that situation.
So awareness is key, is what I'm hearing. And the other piece is being able to, as you said so eloquently, quiet yourself in that moment and almost get step outside of yourself, if you will, right? And being able to look back at what's going on with you, what's going on inside of you. And sometimes that's difficult, right? Sometimes where, like you said, you're in the kitchen and things are swirling, you can't always stop. Sometimes you're at work and you're on a Zoom call and things are coming at you or whatever. And so what are some tricks to doing that? How do you, like, you've got the awareness now, you feel it, you're like, wow, I'm in the spiral at the moment. What is it? What are some techniques to help you get into that moment to just be able to kind of pull yourself out of and then look at it from a different angle?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a friend that told me once something that I've done when I'm really in a moment, and it's literally to just give yourself a timeout.
And, I love it.
And you know, for me, it means I go to my closet and I sit on the floor and I put my hand on my heart and I say, "Beloved, I am here for you. I see that you're suffering. I am here." And I've used that when I'm really in a moment and it's showing yourself that compassion. I see that you're suffering. Oh, wow. It really gives you permission and it gives you validation for the space you're in. And once you feel that, it really does slow down your heartbeat. It slows down your emotion. And also, you know, an emotion only lasts 90 seconds. It's in, you know, if it's in neuro, it's a statistics with neuroscience that an emotion only lasts 90 seconds. The only reason it would last longer is if you continue to re-engage. But sometimes that little pause, a timeout in the closet, a walk out of the room, 90 seconds to just give that emotion time to ride out, then you're able to say, "I see you're suffering. Let's let it ride out. Let's pause. Let's breathe. Okay, now let's see what this is really about." And then there are things like a tool called walking back the cat. Why am I feeling this way? What's triggering me? Okay, well, maybe it's that. Okay, but is that really it? Or is it, oh, no. Oh, I feel unappreciated. Oh, I just decided, I figured it out. I discovered what it was. And all of these things were building, you know, whether it's I'm coordinating a schedule, I'm dealing with dinner, I'm, you know, being asked where socks are for soccer, or whatever it is. And all this is worrying around me. And really what it comes back to is my need for appreciation or my need to feel, you know, a little bit of gratitude because I feel like a servant that's serving Cinderella all the time. So I feel triggered by that. I feel triggered by any little question, but until I have the moment to pause, be able to really let the emotion ride and assess the situation and walk back that cat, I have no idea what's happening. I just know I'm really pissed off that I have to go find a maroon sock somewhere or whatever right. It is. Silly example, but you know, that's an example of those times.
Right. No, I completely relate to so many of those examples that you have just given with my own moments of being in the kitchen. And as you said, the hurricane is swirling and everyone's like, "I've got to be here and I've got to be there." So I totally relate to that. I'm curious as you think of what, so we've been talking a lot about self-compassion. And I think when you and I first started talking, the thought of self-compassion was so foreign to me. And it's not because I don't feel compassion for myself or unable to do that. I just hadn't thought about it in that way. And I noticed that, you know, I was giving compassion to everyone all the time, but why wasn't I taking that moment to give myself that moment and saying, "Hey, it's okay. You can handle this. You've got this. It's okay." But I was spending too much time kind of beating myself up. I'm curious if there are people out there who are listening, what are some resources you would point them to that they can learn more about some of these tools and tricks?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a woman that studies this her whole life and her name is Kristen Neff, N-E-F-F. And she writes all sorts of cool things on self-compassion. She does retreats on it. And she talks about how our brains are wired for survival and have a natural tendency towards focusing on negative thought patterns. And it's just kind of how it works because we have to figure out, like, there's danger around. So we're constantly looking for how we can survive. And so self-compassion and being present helps us to understand that and transform those habitual responses to actually deal less with self-criticism and more, how can I take action and make positive changes and see myself as a growing, beautiful human being? So I've loved Kristen's work because I think that she looks at the real neuroscience behind it, but also puts in the practical, you know, the practical tactics for daily life, you know. Then you were talking about how you don't often treat yourself in the way where you might treat other people with tremendous amount of compassion, but maybe not the other. And there's a really cool article. It's positivepsychology.com. So, but it's a really awesome article on how would you treat a friend, and listing all these ways and then turning that back around on you and saying, and how would you, you know, how could you apply that to who you are? And it's a simple tool and it sounds, you know, a bit elementary, mm-hmm. but if you actually really listen to how you would do that and ways in which you would care for a person and imagine doing that for yourself. Some people don't even understand the practice of self-care and self-motivation and self, the taking care of one's self because they're always looking outwards. So I really love what they say about it, but there's lots of things out there, but Kristen is definitely the one that comes to mind most.
Yeah, no, that's great. And thank you for sharing that. I am the queen of giving advice, but not taking my own advice. So I think it's been a process for me for certain, but I have come to start to really embrace that whole self-compassion and even teaching it to my children and helping them to see, hey, you can do this. I mean, they have their own struggles. And, you know, school is challenging and, you know, that soccer game was tough. And so it's been fun for me to kind of incorporate that into like our whole family unit and teaching them some of that too. But so that's been fun. So thank you for all that great advice. One of the things you mentioned was being present. So we've talked a lot about the awareness and knowing when you're in that moment and, you know, sometimes it's a struggle to find that space to just really bring yourself back to that present moment. And I'm not going to ask you to get into that today because I know that that is a much longer discussion. But I do want to ask you if you would come back and definitely talk to us about how you do that. How do you get into your presence and when you're having that moment, how to do that. So
yeah, absolutely. I would love to do that because that's key. That is key. And talk about the power of the pause. I talked about that earlier. When you take that pause, there's so much to be learned, so much you can become aware of, and so much growth that can happen. And all of this in the end is really just taking us more towards freedom, which is what we all want to feel.
That's right.
Right. So absolutely. Right. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. You, have talked a lot with me about that. And it's, it's been such an eye opener. And I think it is taking that pause is something that, well, all too often we spend so much time. I'm speaking for myself now, but I'm going to say we, as in the general audience, spend so much time preparing for our future, preparing for a meeting, preparing for this and what's tomorrow going to look like and scheduling it. And honestly, I get overwhelmed. You and I've talked about this too, but there's that wild child in me that just wants to roll with it and let it flow and let it happen. But then there's that other part of me that, you know, the dictator who's like, yeah, let's make this happen. We've got to do this right. And let's be prepared. And I struggle sometimes to find that balance. And then I find myself beating myself up over it. And so I'm sure I'm not the only person who does that. I know we all do. So exploring this topic to me is really important. So thank you for this. I really appreciate it. It's always a delight to talk to you. And again, share with us how people can find you on social media, or your website, things like that.
Sure thing. So it goes back to my canary story. So at The Grounded Canary, both on Instagram and then Facebook, The Grounded Canary, and my website, www.thegroundedcanary.com.
Awesome.
Yeah, pretty simple.
Yeah. Thank you. This has been spectacular. I can't wait to have you back on, but, Thank you again. I really appreciate it. And you've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments Media. You can find us where other podcasts can be found, and stay tuned. There will be more and new episodes coming soon. Thanks. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments. For more inspirational content, go to pivotalmoments.org. I'm Sandy Lutton. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to keep an eye out for more episodes where podcasts can be heard. See you next time.